see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Hello, I Seem Funners. We have started. Welcome to I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast.
I'm just an average man.
With an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hell, I pay the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no privacy. When I come home at night, I bolt the door real tight. People call me on the phone I'm trying to avoid. Well, can the people on TV see me, or am I just paranoid? Why am I playing that song? Is it because I'm fascinated with the fact that it's a song by a guy named Rockwell? But Michael Jackson is the one that sings the, I always feel like somebody's watching me. That is Michael Jackson. I could Google it because I have my fingers on a computer. But I am too lazy to stop the podcast and do that. Why did Michael Jackson, who has been famous since he was 4, say, yeah, I'll sing the chorus of your song? I have no idea. But why am I playing that song? Do you love this sense of mystery I'm creating that is probably so obvious that it's not even funny? Hi, everybody. I don't know if you listen to these in order or if maybe every download I have is just one person listening once, but I know there's some regulars out there. Hi to you guys. Is she talking to me? Yes, I'm talking to you. I know you're trying to go to sleep right now. You have your phone or your iPad or however you listen near the bed. It's okay to fall asleep. Let yourself go to sleep. You can pick it back up in the morning when you're getting ready for work. Okay. So the reason I mention all this is because the last episode I did, my doorbell was ringing, right? I think I recorded that on Tuesday night, and then it was released on Wednesday. So, and I said it was my neighbor, Andy. Everybody's been wondering. I got Barbara Walters, Piers Morgan, Oprah calling me. I will not give anyone the exclusive interview of what my neighbor wanted. I'm only telling you guys here. So Oprah, if you want me to sit down with you, you can play this podcast on your show with a still photo of me. But I'm not telling this story more than once. So here's where shit gets crazy, and my life, in my opinion, changed in an irreversible way, at least for now, this week. I am so upset and so frustrated and so bothered and feel so unlucky. Now, this is just me throwing a little bit of a tantrum. So I know it's going to be okay, but I'm just, right now, I'm in it. So what you guys didn't know is I saw my neighbor walk away and I was like, what did he want? Now, in my hope of hearts of hopes, I thought that Andy, my neighbor, now let me take it back. In previous episodes, I mentioned I have this neighbor, Andy, and I could not figure out if he was gay or straight. But I've told stories about him, everything ranging from we used to have this fire alarm because it's a brand new building. And so every time someone used their stove for the first time, it would set off the whole building. And I eventually learned when it happened three times in one night to just ignore it. And he would be knocking on my door like, there's a fire. And I'm like, okay. He always seems like kind of sweaty and has a rash on his face. Like it's off-putting. It's what I call if Tom Arnold wasn't famous, you would be like, okay, this guy's weird. But because Tom Arnold is famous and we all accept him into our lives as our savior, that you're like, okay, he's fine. Actually, I do love Tom Arnold. He is a casual acquaintance of mine. He has done nothing but be so good to me. He used to run a show at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. And I just got booked on it. He didn't know who I was. And he actually used to sit and watch the comics. Like he would host and then he would watch everybody. And he loved my stuff and I felt so comfortable there. So I started like performing on his show like almost every other week and just like going up, and like a lot of my material is from working it out on stage, just improvising stories on Tom Arnold's show at the Laugh Factory. And the Laugh Factory is like a super comedy club kind of club. It's like kind of where girls like this go. Like it's on the Sunset Strip, but it's like we're going to go out after and party. But the Club Hyde is next door and it's like, yeah, like Lindsay and Paris used to go to that club like 5 years ago, but it's like so uncool now that's probably cool again. I don't know. So it's like those kind of people. So it's not always totally my people, not Tom's either, I don't think, not anybody's, but if you can work out new material at that place and have it, and people actually listen, you know, you got a good show on your hands and a good host who creates a great environment. And I like his style because he just tells stories and all that kind of thing. So he was always really cool to me. We always kept in touch, and he and his lovely wife, Ashley, sent me beautiful champagne glasses on as a wedding gift that I didn't even ask them to. And then actually, ironically, I am divorced, so maybe Tom Arnold sent me a bad luck gift because he has many marriages. But anyway, he's a lovely man, and one of the super good guys in comedy who's totally not sexist. He married fucking Roseanne and still only has good things to say about her even after she stabbed him. So he's a really cool guy. I know. I remember reading in a book that she wrote that he also was really good to Laura Keitlinger back in the day and got her some work. So he's a super cool guy. And also one time he had just had like an operation, and I was doing this like crappy talk show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in LA. I used to just interview people. And, but it was like a full show. I had like my friend, Brendan Hines, everyone shout out to Brendan. Follow him on Twitter, Brendan Hines. I don't know if it's underscoring, but just look him up. Great actor, but he also is a great musician, and he would do the music for my talk show and be sort of like a sidekick. And then I would interview like three of my friends, and it was always fun, and it wasn't, you know, stiff or anything like that. This one particular night, I think I had forgotten to ask Brendan, and he couldn't come. And then the two other people I was interviewing dropped out, and it was just like, I should just cancel on Tom, but I didn't want to cancel on the theater. So I just didn't tell Tom that the entire show was really not a show. So then when he got there, I was like, oh, nobody showed up. Like, I just have to interview you for an hour on stage. And it was great because it was right after Arnold Schwarzenegger, after we found out that he had had sex with his maid and had a kid. I mean, that had happened 14 years ago at this point, but we all were just finding out. And Tom just gave me like an exclusive interview on the stage at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. It was not recorded. Cause he's friends with Arnold, and about, you know, he talked about the situation. He talked more in general about marriage being difficult and infidelities and all that kind of stuff. So it was very interesting. And I swear to you, I got that interview before even Howard Stern. But nobody knows. It's lost to the walls of the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, which is what is so cool about living in LA sometimes. Although I've never heard from any audience members that were there. Like, I think it was the greatest night, and yet people are just like, nah. So it's too cool here, right? Too cool to give a compliment or even know what you're seeing is kind of neat. Anyway, my point is, if we didn't have proof that Tom Arnold was a functioning member of society who was capable of acting, doing comedy, being successful in his sobriety, you would see him, as I did right after his operation, where he was just a little sweaty and a little bit, like, out of sorts and perhaps limping and just like, and just kind of neurotic. Like, that's what my neighbor's like. And I'm not saying, like, oh, it's okay if you're famous. I'm just saying, like, it's just my funny way of saying, like, it's a quick visual to get into everyone's head. Imagine, like, Tom Arnold, but blonde. Okay, now imagine that he's not famous and, like, lovable, and you've heard him on 50 interviews. You don't know anything about this guy. And now you're like, oh, I see what you mean. So that's my neighbor. And in other episodes, I mentioned how he, what I seemed to think was starting to happen was that I would open my door in the morning, and then suddenly his would open, like he was kind of listening for me. And then he'd be like, I never see you. Hi, stranger. What do you do for a living? And it would just be like a barrage of questions. I'm in bed. Anyway, I need to reheat some hot water, though, so I'm going to be out of bed for a second. So last week on the podcast, my doorbell was ringing, and I said, oh, my God, it's my neighbor, Andy. And I started whispering like I'm doing now. Well, after I stopped recording, I went to my door, and I opened it. And there was a note on my door. And it said, Jennifer, which is weird because that's not my name. I don't introduce myself as Jennifer. So he gets that name from just looking at my packages that are sometimes outside my door. So he said, Jennifer, please come knock on my door when you get this. And I was like, no. Who asks that? Who leaves? That's like the voicemail of notes. That is the voicemail of notes. Oh, hey, person that necessarily doesn't want to be contacted by me. I'm contacting you, keeping it super vague so that your curiosity is piqued. Perhaps I'm even making you paranoid about something, that you did something wrong. And now you're going to have to reach out to me to find out the information. Nobody wants that kind of situation. So I did what I call, what would Angelina Jolie do? And I just ripped the note down, crumpled it up, threw it down the trash chute as I walked by, and told myself, I will never think about this again. You don't just knock on my door and then think I'm going to come answer it and that I'm going to even think again about what you want and why you knocked. I am Angelina Jolie. I am busy. There's six kids hanging off me. I have a hot fiance husband person that I stole from someone else. I am running around the world, acting, saving the world. I mean, you think she stops for a second? Someone knocked on her door and left a note? She would just, no. Now, I would like to be so scary and mysterious like Angelina that people would even be too afraid to leave a note. That it would just be like, don't fucking mess with that girl across the hall. But I'm not Angelina Jolie. I'm a neurotic comedian who is completely obsessed by being terrified of doing something wrong to someone, of being in trouble, of, I don't know. So what ended up happening was that I sat at work, and every half hour or so, the thought would roll through my head like a storm cloud. Your neighbor left you a note, Jen, and he wants to talk to you. And you know that it wasn't just a passing thing. You know this person is a little weird and you don't know what it is yet. And they've got you on their mind. Then things started rolling through my head. What if he's not weird? What if it's like he's pissed and he's trying to create the drama and I did something wrong? I know there's a couple nights I was kind of loud in here. I know there's a couple nights where I was talking on the phone, just using my Is it my outside voice or my inside voice? My outside voice. You know, talking loud, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I know there's definitely some nights, maybe had a couple people over, maybe people were loud. I don't know. Maybe he thinks I'm a loud neighbor. I'm singing in my bedroom into the podcast. I know I don't shut my doors quietly as I should. And I'm thinking this guy is going to say, look it. I've reported you to the building manager. You're a nuisance. You're loud. And I'm having you thrown out. Unless you give me $20 or sit down and have a glass of wine with me. I don't know what I thought. But I just knew there's going to be a confrontation. So I'm dreading going home. I go to a Pilates class. Oh my God, this lifestyle is extravagant. And then I get home. There's a package outside my door. Oh my God, she shops online and takes a Pilates class. Well, Miss Rich Bitch, I don't know if you understand this, but this is the government's been shut down all week. And there you are, like some Nicole Richie or something. Some really nice one. I know, Jen, finish the fucking story. But I just want to take a minute and interrupt it. This really nice woman named Susanna, who is in Portugal. Which I would, Susanna, I want to visit Portugal. I'm not inviting myself over or anything. I'm just saying I would like to visit. Her girlfriend came to my show in London. And she wrote me an email. One of the things in it was that she thinks I should name the voice of the ones that bicker that keep coming to my podcast episode. So yeah, it has kind of narrowed down to two people. There's this guy kind of corrects facts. And then there is this girl. She's stupid. But here's the thing, Suzanne, I was mulling it over. I don't feel like I want to name them because I don't want them to be just voices in my head that I control. Like, these people exist in our world. We all deal with them in real life, whether it's at work or their voices in our own head or whatever. So I don't want to give them names because I feel like everyone perhaps has named them in their own minds and I want it to belong to everybody. So if I name them Miller and Brickley, that's her name, then that doesn't mean anything to anyone. Miller and Brickley, I don't know where I got those names, but maybe those have to be their names now. But anyway, so I get home, there's a package, and something about that I understand. I'm like psychically sensing, like the minute that, as quiet as I shut my door, the minute this package is no longer sitting in the hall, if Andy has been paying attention, he will open his door and see that the package is gone and that I am home. Like, I knew, I just could feel it in my bones that something was coming. So I get home, it's about 8:15. I shut my door. We can talk frankly, right? I'm sitting on the toilet to go pee. Sorry, I sit. Sorry if you had a different image of me, but I sit. I am having an asthma attack. I would like to use my inhaler. Don't go freaking out about the dead air. I don't know how to use this system where I can pause, so maybe you can enjoy some more of a, I don't know, what would you want to listen to? How about this? How about while I have an asthma attack and use my inhaler, because you have to kind of hold your breath. You can listen to Great Speeches in History. Here. you're going to hear John F. Kennedy talk about go to the moon.
Of our population as a whole, despite that, the vast stretches of the unknown and the unanswered and the unfinished still far outstrip our collective comprehension. No man can fully grasp how far and how fast we have come. But condense, if you will, the 50,000 years of man's recorded history in a time span of but a half a century. Stated in these terms, we know very little about the first 40 years, except at the end of them, advanced man had learned to use the skins of animals to cover them. Then about 10 years ago, under this standard, man emerged from his caves to construct other kinds of shelter. Only 5 years ago, man learned to write and use a cart with wheels.
What the fuck is he talking about? Okay. His accent is crazier than I remembered. Like, it sounds honestly like an impression of him. But this is really him. The fuck accent did those people have? So different than my family's. So anyway. I'm sitting down. Pee-pee, pee-pee. And I hear, along with the doorbell at the same time, ding-dong, ding-dong, ding. Like that kind of knocking. Like craziness. And I'm like, oh, God, I just knew it was him. So I tiptoe to the door and I look and it's him. And he walks back into his apartment. And every 15 minutes until 10:15 at night, he was ringing and knocking and ringing and knocking. And I know you're like, Jen, why didn't you answer the door? I was getting more paralyzed by the second. I was just texting my friend going, I really don't know what to do. And he's like, I'll come over. And I'm like, no, this seems insane. And he's like, well, what's the phone number of your doorman? I'm like, I don't even know if there is one. But I couldn't leave to go down to the doorman because then on the way back up, he would be waiting for me face to face. And I didn't want to, another guy friend of mine said to me, I would have answered the door and been like, what the fuck? I'm like, well, of course you would have because you're a man. But a woman who's alone on the fourth floor where no one can hear her scream cannot open the door to a stranger. I mean, I could have looked through the people and been like, what do you want? And then been like, go away. There was just honestly something about, well, I guess I'm just like a pussy who's terrified of actual confrontation. Although I'm weirdly not like, you know, I stand up for myself in all kinds of moments. If I'm having an issue on stage, if I'm talking to my, like in showbiz realms, you know, if I don't agree with something at work or, you know, I think my agent's wrong about something, like I'm always like, no. You know, I'm very gruff sometimes. And in, obviously with strangers in public, like I've had like words with people. So I guess this is different because it's not quite a stranger and it's not quite the comfortability of someone that works with me or for me or that I work for. It's like that other level of intimacy that the kind you don't want, but like you kind of need to address, and it makes you uncomfortable because now you're put in this position of facing yourself and facing another person and actually just saying to someone's face, like, I literally do not want you in my life. Like, I don't even want to know you exist. Like, whatever you're going to say, I don't care. It's just, even if you don't say that, it's just too much. So I'm texting with my friend and he's like, Jen, this is getting ridiculous. If he knocks at 10:15, he'll knock it all night long. And at this point I'm just coming by because he just wanted to see it. So I'm like, fine. So my platonic male friend comes over So I said, now it's getting covert. I'm like, okay, here's what you do. When you get to the elevator, text me that you're coming down the hall. And I will so quietly open my door and you will just walk in without even saying hello. So that Andy will, as you know, come back in 10 minutes and knock. He won't know anyone has come in. And then you will answer. And he's like, perfect. So that's exactly what happens. I shut my door quietly. 10 minutes later on cue, Andy's knocking again. Now I'm like, oh, because I don't even want to hear the conversation. So I shut my bedroom door. My friend opens the door. And I hear Andy go, oh, he's like all confused. He's like, is Jen home? And my friend is like, she's actually sleeping right now. It's like the weirdest thing because I guess like, well, I guess it wouldn't be that weird. Like someone, I guess, could have a friend over if they're sleeping. But I guess maybe he assumed it was my boyfriend. I don't know. But he's like, she's sleeping right now. And he's like, I can't talk to her. And he's like, no. And he's like, well, I have, oh, so this is, yeah, he goes, I have tickets. I have something I want to give her. And my friend was like, well, whatever it is, like it's, she doesn't, I go, he's like, I have something for her. I have tickets. I thought you'd want these tickets. My friend was like, you know, she's really busy and she works from home at night once she gets home from work. And he's like, she told me she's home all the time, which is not a thing I ever said to him. And my friend was like, yeah, I don't know. And he's like, listen, she's just really busy and it's really not appropriate to knock on a woman's door late at night or anytime. So if you could just not knock anymore, I know that Jen would really appreciate it. And thanks for the offer for the tickets, but you just keep them and we'll just keep to ourselves, like that kind of thing. So Andy leaves. I come out of my room. I'm like, oh my God, it's like so torturous. I'm just like, oh, I can't even listen to the conversation. And my friend goes, yeah, he's a little off. And I'm like, oh, he is? Like, this is how stupid I am. I thought something maybe was like physically wrong with him because he had like a limp and a walker. But I guess I was just like, here's the thing, like, this rent ain't cheap. So it's like a bunch of people, I thought, like professionals who live in a building who just like don't want to like commit to owning something. But you couldn't be like jobless and live here. So I don't really understand, like, so it's like, I don't understand though. Like, what do you mean off? And he's not mentally retarded. He doesn't have an official diagnosis of like Down syndrome or anything like that. And I found out later what it is, but I'm just saying at this moment, I didn't know what was going on. And I was like, he's not drunk. Are you sure? Cause he mentioned wine to me once and he smoked cigarettes. And, so I just thought honestly, like that he was maybe like an alcoholic, like screenwriter. Like that's kind of what I always assumed he was. And my friend was like, no, something's like not quite there. And then he showed me the note and he had spelled comedy. He basically had said, I have two tickets to a comedy show that I want you to go to. But it wasn't even with him because my friend said that he had like presented him the two tickets. They were like printouts. But on the note, he had left a note like a post-it on the door that said, I have two tickets to a comedy show I want you to have. Comedy spelled C-O-M-M-I-D-Y. So I was like, oh, I can't handle this. This is not going to end. I was like, it's not going to end. My friend was like, yes, it is. I told him, I'm like, no, I can feel it. It's not going to end. So my friend's like, you feel good? You safe? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, I'm leaving. So now I'm like, I'm going to email my building manager because this is what this kind of building is all about. It really is now like, you know what? Something's weird. I'm just going to email her. So I sent her this email and I was like, as I'm emailing her, I hear this noise. Like, I don't know if this is going to make any effect on the microphone, but like a scratching at my door. And I tiptoe and there's Andy taping pieces of paper to my door. Just taping papers upon papers to the point where I can't see out the peephole anymore because it's covered in papers. And I'm like, what? And so then I hear his door slam, and he never slams his door. So then I'm sitting there back in my room reading. Sending this email. And he comes back out and his door slams shut again. And now I hear, he's got like a magic marker and he's writing something on the papers. But he's like leaned up writing on the door, like on the papers on the door. And then I hear him slam his door again. 1 minute later, he slams his door again. He comes back out. He's writing more stuff. He's just going back and forth, writing more things on the papers that he taped to my door. So at this point, I'm supposed to be asleep. So I don't do anything. It's like I can't do anything. I don't want to be... Again, the reason I didn't open the door myself earlier was I just don't want to be in the position of having to... It's almost like taking a command from someone. When a guy is knocking on your door, if you open it, like you have made the next welcoming move. It's like, I don't want to do anything. I want to separate myself from him as much as possible. So then he leaves all the stuff on the door. And I'm laying in bed and I'm like, it is now like 1 a.m. and I can't sleep. And I had plans for myself to go to bed at 10:30 that night. I was really tired. I had an early morning the next day. So I write the building manager. Now, my friend suggested, play up the, I live alone, I don't feel safe, whatever. So I did. I sent this long email describing everything I just told you guys. And I was like, what is this? You know, I want to feel safe. I live alone, blah, 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 blah. And I had this feeling when I hit send. It's this awful feeling that women get when they second guess themselves because they feel guilty about setting a boundary with a weirdo. Did I overreact? My building manager is a woman, by the way. But I'm like, did I overreact? Couldn't I just have handled this myself? Couldn't I open that door myself and been like, what do you want? No, I don't want to go to a show. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. Couldn't I have done that? Yeah, I guess I could have. But I suck at that. My friend said to me, Jen, if you had answered that door, you'd be going to a comedy show. But that's not true. I'm not that much of a sucker. I like don't let my time get wasted. But he wasn't asking me to go to one. That was the thing. He had two tickets he wanted to give to me to you know. So my building manager writes back the next morning, what I think is way too casual of an email, but she kind of explains that my neighbor. Oh, by the way, I've been getting his name wrong this whole time because of the way he speaks. I thought his name was Andy. It's Brandon. My name is Brandon. I thought he was saying Andy. So she writes me back and explains Brandon. She writes me back and explains that she knew him before. Like, she knew his family. That he's a little bit developmentally off just with social skills. And his parents pay his rent. And he's just kind of this, like, he's that guy. He's that, like, kind of developmentally disabled, like, guy. And it's heartbreaking. Now it's, like, getting sad. And I'm like, oh, God. So thank God I didn't yell like, fuck you, get away. You know, back when I just thought he might be some drunk. But now I'm like, oh my God, there's like a developmentally, like socially awkward guy across the hall who's just trying to get, she goes, so my building manager writes, don't be afraid. He's not harmful. He doesn't have any diagnoses that are like you need medication for, like a schizophrenia or bipolar where he could, you know, become violent if you don't, whatever. But it all was just a little disconcerting because I was the first one on this floor. I moved in like right when the building opened. And I came here like someone, like the type of people you, the fictional, not fictional, but the, you know, like dramatized version of what you see at the Statue of Liberty. Like, give me your poor, you're tired. Like, I came crawling to this building like, hi, I've been living next door to two loud 20-somethings. There's crack addicts in my alley and there's a toddler above me and I haven't slept in a year and a half. Like, I was just like exhausted. And I was like, listen, I travel. I'm out of town a lot. And when I'm not, my home is my sanctuary. And I work from home as well. And I'm a writer. And I just need quiet. Is there quiet here? And she's like, oh yeah. And I go, I don't want anyone up in my business. She's like, oh no. So she gave me this apartment that's kind of at the end of the hall by myself, so that I wouldn't have neighbors on two sides. And she gave me a top floor so that I wouldn't have anyone above me. And she did the same thing for Brandon. And I'm like, why? Because I think he knows not to bother a family with a baby, like the people down the hall from me. But he thinks to bother a single woman, because as he said, he thought that I was lonely and home all the time. So my building manager said, oh yeah, everyone knows him. There is a front desk hotline for the doorman. The doormen know him. She goes, he comes to my office every day, and I have to be like, okay, I'm doing my work now, Brandon. I'm like, oh, that's a cute story. But then you get to go home at 6 p.m. I don't. I come home, and then that's when he starts knocking. And it's fucking weird. Because I think the weirdest part for me is him knowing my comings and goings, in the sense that he's listening. So I read her email in the morning and I'm like, ugh. She's like, I won't say anything to him unless you tell me to, but I do know how to speak to him because I've known him and I know how to speak to his issues. And I can absolutely tell him never to knock again. But it was just that she was like, so then I walked outside and the notes were gone. They were not on my door. He must have taken them off. What I did notice was that there are wet footprints all outside of his door with a trail to my door. So he obviously had like taken a shower in the morning, thought about the notes, hopefully threw a towel on, opened his door, came to mine, took the notes off, walked back into his apartment, shut the door. That was just too disturbing again. So then I wrote her back again and I said, look, I am glad that you explain to me that he's not harmful. But at this point, it's my quality of living. And I don't care about harmful. I was like, this cannot go on. Or else I will take further action. Empty threat. I don't know what action I would take. I said, this is totally unacceptable. You do need to talk to him. I said, but because of this incident, I still feel like a prisoner in my own home, because I know the moment is going to come when he's going to want to apologize for having upset me, and he's going to want to continue contacting me, or I'm just going to run into him in the hallway, and now he's going to be like, there's the girl that told on me. So now I just feel icky, ooky, ucky, and every minute that I'm coming and going, I have to go act as if you're Angelina Jolie. Just be a steely-gazed C word, who's got six kids around her. She's getting on a plane to go to save some more. She's doing an ambassador thing. She's making a movie. She might be bisexual. Maybe she's meeting her weird Asian man looking model ex-lover in a hotel. Brad's calling. You're busy. Who? What are you doing? You're down the hall. Okay. Yeah, I gotta go. That's just what I have to do. He has not bothered me since she talked to him, and I've not even heard him open the door. And I feel so fucking guilty because he's developmentally disabled or something like that. But, and that's where I'm like, really, Jen? You help out charities. You think you're this good person. Wouldn't a good person go knock on his door and go, I'm so sorry. You seem so nice. And that was very sweet to offer the comedy tip. No, no, no. I don't know what world goes on in his head. I don't know what feelings he processes and what he doesn't. My building manager said every day he comes down and tries to give her a new thing, whether it's a free massage, like a coupon or something. She's like, everybody knows him. It's like, here he comes, coming to talk to everybody. And I'm like, what do you owe his family that you gave him this apartment in this beautiful building? And why couldn't you put him on the first floor? I know why. Because you don't want him to bother you. So now I feel bad. I feel like I even thought he was offering me tickets to a comedy show because he might recognize me from television. But it wasn't. It wasn't that. He just had tickets to a comedy show. A lot of times comedy clubs will email you that you won free tickets, which you didn't, by the way. That just means they're giving away free tickets. Sorry, should I not say that? So I just feel like a monster. I know I'm not, but I feel like a monster. I'm definitely not. I'm not Jesus. I don't know. He might stop and invite this guy over for wine, but I can't do it. I'm not Jesus. I'm not even, I'm not Mary Magdalene either, who wasn't a whore, by the way. I'm not anyone in the Bible. I mean, you know what I am? I'm just like that extra in the background who just is like, isn't there some story in the Bible of an old woman who gave her last coin to the temple or to the poor, even though she didn't have anything? I'm not her. I'm like two rows behind her. I'm just like some faceless person. That's me. Just not helping anyone. Just like, everyone leave me alone. I'm in here writing. I'm definitely not Mia Farrow. I've been reading the article about her in Vanity Fair. First of all, I did not know about the Woody Allen molesting his, not Soon-Yi, but another of their daughters. And I'm so disgusted. It's like terrifying. Her account is terrifying. Like, I really won't patronize his newest projects. I feel bad that I saw Blue Jasmine. But this is something that I read and I was like, okay, I am not as good of a person as Mia Farrow. And this, when I read you this two paragraphs of one of the humans she adopted, it's mind-boggling. And I was one of those things that I'm like, okay, no one can ever complain about anything again because they're not this person. But then I realized that was stupid because mental illness and depression is so real that as someone, as a survivor of severe clinical depression that had to be solved with such intense therapy and such bouts of medication in my 20s, that there was no asking me to have perspective because you can't. It's a disease in your brain. So it's a stupid thing to say. But if you are of sound mind and body enough to think about this when you just need something to feel grateful for, even if everything's going wrong, if you just go, well, I'm not this, then I think we can be grateful. I always go, I have my limbs. So he was talking about all the kids Mia Farrow adopted. And she has an Indian son from India who's a paraplegic. And he's studying to be a policeman, which I was unclear on how you can do that. But maybe he would be more administrative. I'm not sure. But anyway, so this is how she found him. His name is Thaddeus. As a paraplegic in Calcutta, he was discarded in a railway station and forced to crawl on his hands and stubs of legs to beg for food. Later, at an orphanage, he was chained to a post and kids would throw rocks at him to prompt the mannish growls he made. When Mia saw him, she says, she had a powerful reaction. Quote, "That's my son." Mia thought he was 5, but when doctors examined his teeth, they determined he was 12. He was so filled with rage that he would bite Mia and try to pull her hair out. But she taught him that even if he could not choose how he was born, he could choose how to behave. He shared a room with his Isaiah, who describes him as, quote, "the hidden gem of the family. He's such a hard worker." Thaddeus walks with crutches or uses a wheelchair. Quote, "It was scary to be brought to a world of people whose language I did not understand, with different skin colors," he told me. "The fact that everyone loved me was a new experience, overwhelming at first." He eventually found he had a talent for mechanics. lying on his skateboard, he could push himself under cars to fix them. Mia tried to get him into a technical school, but they wouldn't take him. Last Christmas, he came home after spending a year living in upstate New York, losing weight, doing odd jobs. A girlfriend had started taking him to church, and he had a spiritual awakening. He became a good Samaritan, stopping to help people stranded along the roadside to change their tires. He decided he wanted to work in law enforcement and talked his way into a criminal justice program at a junior college. "You're an inspiration," the officer in charge told him. I mean, what? Who kind of monsters are there? First of all, I can't even speak. Walking on his stubs, chained, rocks thrown at him. And then becomes a good Samaritan. Even though he doesn't have the use of two of his limbs. I don't know if it's arms or legs he doesn't have the use of. I guess legs. All right, stubs of legs. Yeah, he doesn't have legs. And I'm a full sound body and mind. I can't be nice to my neighbor. I have to tell on him. But I'm sorry, it really was scaring me. When I was scared and I, as a grown woman, couldn't go, "Could you leave me alone, please?" Oh, anyway. So then I read this online and I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up. So somebody sent this to me. Oh, wait. Let's do this. Oh, this is going to sound even shittier of a person. Let's cheer up a little bit. Let's cheer up a little bit. New York. Yes, this is a plug, but it's one you haven't heard yet. You don't know what I'm about to say. I am going to tell you about my podcast, but there's a new thing that's pretty fucking cool. So New York, November 7th, I am taping my first I Seem Fun live podcast. There will be a major bed that I am borrowing from someone. It's from Sky Mall. It's like a real bed. I don't know why I'm like acting like, come see a bed. I'm just saying, like, I will recreate the experience as a lunatic adult talking to herself in her bedroom like she was a teenager. I will be taking live I Seem Fun questions and comments from the audience. Union Hall, November 7th, one night only. Tickets are on my website, jenkirkman.com/tour dates. I hope you can buy them in advance. That way it sets my heart at ease that people are coming. But please tell your friends. I don't have, like last time I came to Union Hall, I had a big press barrage because I had a publicist. It was a book tour. This is just me coming back. So tell a friend if you think they like me, but they just don't know. Write a blog, announce it on your podcast, whatever you're going to do. It's my first. I would love it to go well so then I could do more of these around the country, around America. So, okay, so November 9th. My best friend, oh, hi, Mark, and I are doing a show. Okay, it's not my best friend, but I'm just quoting the room. Greg Sestero has written an amazing book called The Disaster Artist. He is the guy who played Mark in the movie The Room. If you don't know what The Room is, I can't explain it to you. If you do know what it is and you live in New York, you're like, yes. Greg wrote a book. He's doing a show on November 9th in Brooklyn again at Union Hall. The book is, I think the show is called Oh Hi Mark, Greg Sestero and the Comic Genius of The Room. Greg is going to be there in person to field fan questions, screen a never-before-seen documentary, I think, about the making of The Room, and welcome stand-up comedians that celebrate the movie The Room. That's me, Jen Kirkman. Greg asked me. I said, even though people are acting strange these days, and I heard a girl got beat up so bad on Guerrero Street. And even though it's definitely breast cancer, and even though some guy is trying to shoot me for drug money, I will try to make it. I will definitely make it. You're my favorite customer. Of course I'm going to come. Now, I will not be doing my own Jen Kirkman stand-up. I will be doing a specific thing about The Room. And I will leave what I'm doing to be a surprise. But I may not be appearing as myself. How's that? It's a really quick little thing. There's other comedians on it, too. Joel Escher and Kurt Metzger will be there as well. Sorry, Kurt. I didn't mean to mispronounce your name. I know how to pronounce it. I just, like, tripped. Anyway, so, but you should go if you're not already going. But, yeah, it's going to be a big couple days for Brooklyn. So, that's that. Now, let me get back to what I was saying. So, speaking of adoption, I read this story and I wanted to just lay down and die. There's this boy named, I think it's D-A-V-O-N, Davon, Davon. Let's say it's Davon. An orphaned 15-year-old went to church last week in a donated black suit that was too big for him and asked for one thing he wants most, a family. I'll take anyone, he told the Tampa Bay Times, old or young, dad or mom, black, white, purple, I don't care. And I really would be appreciative, the best I could be. Born to a jail mother, cocaine addict, who died a few months ago, he's only been shuffled through one foster home after another, never finding a permanent home. He now lives in a group home with 12 other boys. He's 15. All of this led to having anger issues, and he learned in June that his mom was dead after he searched her name on a library computer. He decided he was tired of waiting for someone to find him and offer him a loving home. He decided to find them. Once he learned that his mother wasn't ever going to come and get him, he says a spark changed him. He lost 40 pounds, harnessed his anger issues, and started paying attention in school, earning A's in every class except geometry. His caseworker said he decided he wanted to control his behavior and show everyone who he could be. It was his idea to go to the St. Mark Missionary Baptist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida, to ask the 300 parishioners if one of them would adopt him. But as he pulled into the church parking lot with his caseworker, he got nervous and said, I don't want to do this anymore. And she said, you're going to be great. After the sermon, he was invited up to speak. He wiped his hands on his pants and nervously cleared his throat and began to address the congregation. He said, my name is Davion. Oh, it's Davion. Oh, they spelled it wrong at the beginning. My name is Davion, and I've been in foster care since I was born. I know God hasn't given up on me, so I'm not giving up either. When I first read this the other day, it said, as of press time, nobody has come forward to adopt him. And if I didn't eat a bag of peanut M&Ms 1 second later, and I don't do the candy, you guys, I didn't know what to do. I was despondent. This shit fucking kills me. Listen, if I could have a 15-year-old black son, I would. But you see what's going on in my apartment building here. I got someone knocking on the door. I don't know why I think I could take in a 15-year-old kid with anger issues. He would only be more angry living with me. You cannot have a mother that abandoned you and then go to Jen Kirkman's house. Because I'll abandon you too when I go to work and then when I go on the road and then when I come home and I need quiet. I'd probably send him across the hall and go play with your neighbor, Brandon. He's got tickets to a comedy show. I'd be a terrible mother. But I'm a huge guilty empath. And so this story murdered me. It made me so angry. And it's one of those things where it's like, what a beautiful person to imagine just sitting there on a, is this the saddest podcast ever? I know. Here's the thing. I don't necessarily do this to be funny. I just do it to show myself. And if I can like make it funny, that's great. And sometimes I'm just talking, as long as it's interesting, I don't really care. But I'm not necessarily labeling it a comedy podcast. I call it a diary. So, okay, just cut back. So, but things run through your head like, that'd be a great reality show. It's like, what, you're going to adopt a black kid so you can get a reality show? I'm like, no, I don't really want a reality show, but I mean, I just can't imagine he would probably hate me. I would hate the music he listens to. I would be like, Davion, come here, we're watching Golden Girls. Like, I would ruin this kid. Ruin him. But just imagine sitting in the library by yourself when you're Googling the news that your mother is dead. And what does he do? Go to the librarian? Like, excuse me, could you hold me for a second? I mean, it's awful. It's horrible. So, anyway, I just reread the article, and a spokesman for the Department of Children and Families said Thursday, which was, I'm recording this on a Friday, I'm recording it early, that his foster home had received at least 300 calls about him. I hope it wasn't all borderline narcissist empathic LA people who are like, oh my God, so sad. I'm going to blog about it. I'm going to call. Like, I really hope these are real families. But man, what I wouldn't give to just, I don't know. I just want him to go somewhere where everyone's just like hugging him, where it's just like, we're a family. Can we decide 1, 2, 3, we're a family. Okay, I'm moving in. And just let him have a Christmas this year. Oh my God, everyone send him a million presents. Because presents, that's what it's all about. Just get him stuff. Anyway, my God, I hope he finds a family. Isn't that so nice? He wants a family so bad. We all bitch about our families. My family's crazy. And some people's probably are. I'm not talking about people who come from, like, you know, insanity. But my God, it's just touching. So then that brings me to this. I was reading someone sent this to me. This woman writes, she's like a mother who wrote an angry blog. I don't know what, it's a website called renegademothering.com. And this mother wrote a blog called Public Service Announcement to the Childless People Wondering Why We're Such Losers. So defensive already. First of all, no one childless thinks people with kids are losers. Nope, none of us do. Also, the expression is child-free, because childless implies that you wanted one and couldn't have one. But when you think of this kid, Davion, and the beautiful family that's going to take a chance and adopt an older kid, you know, 4 years to college, oh, now I'm paying, you know, all this money for you to go to college. Oh, you have anger issues and abandonment issues? That's not an easy thing to just pick up and take care of. All the beautiful people who work in foster care, all the beautiful kids who just want to be loved. And you have these women sitting around blogging all day who talk about how busy they are and how hard it is to be a mother. And they're just sitting on here being so nasty. So she wrote, occasionally I come across a blog post saying something like this. So all my friends are having babies and I don't understand why they've all lost themselves. I mean, why can't they hang out with friends like they used to, drink some cocktails, get a life? I read a blog recently by some childless bag. Wait, I mean blogger. I would link to it, but I'm afraid you would all slaughter her with your wit and intelligence. Okay, so first you start this thing that you come across blogs where childless people are wondering why parents can't go get drunk with them. Then you say that you read something and you called her a bag. But then you're like, no, I can't link to it. Straw man argument. You sound like Bill O'Reilly. Enough nonsense. So then she writes this thing. It's a public service announcement to people without kids so that we can understand what is happening to these people. And it's all stuff we know. It's like, we know it's hard to have kids. That's why we don't have them. It's not because we can't do things that are hard or we're selfish. It's not within, like, it's not within my specific skill set to raise a child. My skill set that I was born with, that I've developed, and then my external circumstances, whether it be where I live, don't want to raise a child in LA, my financial situation, my work situation, my stability, my family of origin, and there's so many things. It would be a terrible idea for me to raise a child. It would not be a good life for either of us. Now, I have a certain skill set that people with kids probably would not want because they don't do it. I assume anyone that would want to work 40 hours a week at a job as a comedy writer also go on the road. So you leave, you know, you take Friday off work. So you get up at 4 a.m. and go to the airport, get on a plane by yourself, then check into a town you've never been to, stay there alone, go do comedy in front of people you never met 5 times that weekend, an hour each time, and then get on the plane again Sunday, then get home, then do all your laundry and errands that day, and then go back to work Monday at 9 a.m. or whatever. And then in your spare time, write a book and then write a script. So you have the book and the script are due within a few months. You're working a full-time job and you're on the road. That's what takes a certain skill set. I have that skill set and even I am overwhelmed by it. So that's what I do. And it's not better or worse, but it certainly keeps my hair in a ponytail, keeps me, you know, I'm sleepless as well. Now, I guess technically I don't have to catch a plane and nobody dies. You know, you have to get up and feed your kid. But my point is these childless people she's talking about, I don't know who they are because at age 39, 40, I'm not partying all the time. I definitely could. Like if I just decided to blow off writing one night and I'm like, I'll do it in the morning. And I wanted to go have some drinks after work. I could. And I've done stuff like that. So I guess it's different in that sense. Like I do have a freedom of choice. I can be a little more spontaneous, even though I don't often take myself up on that opportunity. But so I just thought this was funny. So you got Mia Farrow going to get this kid with just stumps who's getting rocks thrown at him and he's growling. And she's like, that's my son. And whoever this beautiful family is, it's going to adopt this 15-year-old with anger issues. Beautiful. And then this is this woman, this mommy blogger. All right, you want us to hang out with friends more often? Presumably without our kids, right? Okay, well, we're meeting you for dinner on a Friday evening at a restaurant that's 45 minutes away at 7 p.m. That sounds easy, right? Well, it is for you, childless people. Here's what you do. You come home from work, screw around on the internet, have a glass of wine, a snack, hop in the shower, bathe yourself leisurely, get out, towel off, peruse the closet, get dressed, have your partner get ready, pour another glass of wine, maybe chat with a friend on speakerphone while you put on makeup, do your hair, put on shoes, get in the car at 6 p.m. so you don't have to rush, order a cocktail when you get there, have dinner with friends, go out for a drink, dance after dinner, come home around 1 a.m., have sex, sleep till 9 or 10, wake up to some coffee and chat about how sad it is that your friends have lost themselves after they've had kids. What? Hey, people without kids listening to this, could you do all that on a Friday and get to a restaurant at 7? Who gets out of work at 5? What is this, the 50s? If I get out of work and I have a dinner at 7, there's no showering, snacking, or whining. I am late. I'm trying to get somewhere. First of all, I have friends with kids. And not since any of my friends had their kids have I ever had them come to me. I go to their side of town so that they don't have to go very far. And I usually end up eating with them and their kids. There isn't literally, this woman has terrible time management, then don't meet your friend who doesn't have kids far away. Meet halfway. Also, so she thinks in this scenario that I'm having 2 glasses of wine before dinner. I'm talking on speakerphone to a friend while I'm doing my makeup. What am I, 12? And then I'm going out to dinner with the people without kids. And then I'm coming home and then I'm going dancing. What? Then I'm having sex at 1 a.m. and I'm getting sleeping till 10. I couldn't sleep till 10 on a Saturday. I'm recording this podcast on a Friday night because I wanted to stay in tonight. And Saturday, I have like appointments in the morning. And work to do, and I'm running around all day. I'll probably get up at like 7:30. What kind of, I mean, I know that's not everybody's life, but I feel like for people like this woman, lady, you knew you were going to have kids someday. So before you did, you got it all out of your system and you did stuff. This was obviously your past experience. You did stuff like come home from work, drink wine, get ready, go to dinner, have sex at 1 a.m. That's probably what you did because you knew you were going to not have the chance to do that and have kids someday. People without kids don't have them because their lives don't look leisurely like this. That's why they know they couldn't handle kids with all the stuff they do. This is not a life that anyone who's a grown-up has. Maybe on a weekend I could get ready like this. Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow night I have to go to my friend's birthday and I might have a leisurely time getting ready. So that is the difference between me and someone without kids. But that is also my only one free night this week that isn't taken up with some kind of commitment that I have. So I don't know. I mean, I have friends with kids right now that are at a concert and I couldn't go because I had stuff to do at home. So it's like we all have things we have to do. I'm not comparing and saying they're the same. I'm just saying that this assumption that if you don't have kids, you're sitting around drinking wine at home is ridiculous. Now, sometimes I do sit around and drink wine at home. And thank God that I don't have kids because I really want to enjoy it when I do it. So that's why I chose the life I did. If she thinks that we don't appreciate what she does, then she has shitty friends. Because I make sure my friends with kids know how impressed I am every fucking time I see them. And my friends don't hopefully secretly judge me and think I'm sitting around talking on speakerphone, putting on makeup. I am sitting in a bed talking into a podcast, but this is work. Am I getting paid? No, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, she can go fudge herself, right? Oh, Susanna, stop it. You are so bad. That's the woman who has a fun friend, Susanna, who showed her this website. But she kind of likes how bad Susanna is. Oh, Susanna, she says the F word before 11 a.m. She's got a fun poster, too. It's, I think it says keep calm and carry on, but then it says not in this office. Oh, my God. How come there isn't a bag? Like a specific plane, airplane regulation carry-on size bag that doesn't say keep calm and carry on, ... bag. That's a $1 million idea because that shirt is not going away. Okay. I was going to read an email, an I Seem Fun email from Tim about airport bathrooms, but I'm going to do that next time. Because this is well over an hour up in here. Now listen, all the other podcasts, they do advertising. And guess what? I got some inside info on this stuff. Sometimes they don't even need all the advertising they have. They just want to make some money. That's okay. They should. But I don't do the advertising. I don't know why. Maybe because I have 4 listeners. But listen, here's a good way to support me. Go to my website, jenkirkman.com. Buy my comedy albums. Or buy my book. It's under, you can go click all the links, merch, book, you'll see it. It's just a great way to support anything. And I think you will like my book. There are many relatable stories that aren't all about kids. Although they did want me to have a very strict through line with that book. So it does always bring it back to kids, but that was the assignment. I guess that's it. So Brooklyn, November 7th. Tickets are already on sale. I'm coming to Denver in January. Maybe it's a good Christmas gift for someone. Maybe it's the worst Christmas gift for someone. Maybe it's a Hanukkah gift. Maybe it's a non-holiday gift. Maybe you just get the tickets in January. But I think it's fun to think about what if it's sold out in advance. Denver, I'm changing altitudes for you. My little nose will be so much stuffier than it already is. Bleeding. No, last time I performed in Denver, I have performed there before. I loved it. I was at a theater with other comedians. So. But I got a nosebleed. I woke up, there was blood on my pillow, like I've been doing some cocaine, which I've never done in my life, ever. Ever. Jennifer, are you sure? Yes, I've never even tried it. of people pressuring you to do drugs. No. All right. I think I've said my piece. If you like the podcast, give it 5 stars on iTunes. Write a review. Write in the review. I don't know. What would this week's quote be? My friend Susan says the F word before 11 a.m. What did I just say? I don't know. Just any favorite quote from any episode. Just put that in. I don't know what the iTunes ranking does. It helps something. So I heard it's helpful for viewership or listenership. I don't know. I don't know. I was looking up the stats of who listens where. Like a million weird foreign countries that I'm like, I'm assuming it's people stationed. I'm assuming it's our troops, armed forces, Air Force, Navy, Marines. Hello. Thank you. Thank you, folks, for all that you do. I sit in my room and hide from conflict, so thank you for taking care of conflict for me. That was my special holiday shout out to the American forces. That's it, pokes. Sorry for this weird episode. It was a weird one. But I don't care. Until next week, have fun.